Right. So welcome to this episode of the NDSC podcast. Today we're doing a special deep dive with Karma. And so I have three special guests. We have Dr. Larry Williams, who's the director at Karma and at the Texas Tech University Rawls College of Business. We have Dr. Ernesto Boyle, who's at Indiana University and is a senior editor for Karma. And Dr. Justin DeSimon, who's at the University of Alabama and is an associate editor for Karma. And so for all three of you, as you know, this is a podcast for the New Doctoral Student Consortium, or NDSC, which is a consortium for early stage or people considering PhD programs at the Academy of Management every year. So thinking back, what are your earliest experiences with the Academy of Management and with its conference every year?
Ernest, why don't you jump in since you're the youngest?
Youngest, okay. I would say, in full disclosure, that my first academy, my first couple academies, I felt overwhelmed. It was a little bit like the first day at a new school. There was these big crowds. Everybody seemed to know each other. Everybody knew where they were going. The cool kids were having these department parties in hotels that I wasn't invited to. So in that sense of it, it was just so large. But what made it work for me is I fell in relatively quickly with this this really good group of, I won't necessarily say like-minded folks, but similar temperament and similar goals for what they wanted to get out of academy. They wanted to get some projects going. They wanted to find out a little bit more about the business, pick up a new method, pick up a new stat, something to that drove them in ways that were different necessarily from the large scale social events. So these are still my friends to this day. What I do at Academy, or the way I view Academy, is I almost create my own mini conference out of it. I have my crew that I'm going back to see on a regular basis. I'm interacting with new folks. I've customized my program in a very specific way. So that's what works for me, that even though it is this huge conference with tens of, or, you know, 10,000, however many thousands of people there, it always felt very intimate to me once I got past that initial kind of sense of overwhelm and realizing that there's room to run. And it's a conference that anybody can come to, regardless of how introverted or extrovert you are, regardless how accomplished you are or new or experienced in the field, you can get a tremendous amount out of it for that reason.
I think that's great advice. We heard some similar things on our recent episodes for the NDSC podcast, where we asked people advice on how to tackle the AOM conference, because yes, it can be very overwhelming, especially your first few times.
I think I've been going to Academy for close to 20 years now. And I had a pretty similar experience to Ernest when I first started, where I was just overwhelmed. There were what seemed like thousands and thousands of people, and I didn't know anybody except for the people at my school. I was lucky that my advisor introduced me to a number of people, but, you know, most of them kind of forgot who I was between the first and second time that they met me, because, you know, I'm a new doctoral student and they're, you know, associate and full professors and things like that. And so I wound up hanging out as much as I could with, you know, more established people through my advisor. I like to meet those people. But really, in my downtime, I tried to find people from my own university and just kind of hang out with them. We always went to as many of the, you know, receptions and things as we could, because we were doc students. We wanted the free food and figured it couldn't be too bad for networking either. But as the years went on, Academy has gotten busier and busier. And of course, you know, after graduating and knowing people from various projects that I've worked on, knowing other people in the field, just catching up with people from other universities, it's been great. And I've met a number of people at Academy that I will go and seek out every single year. And much like Ernest said, I try to make it my own conference. It is the busiest conference that I go to. I am booked solid from start to finish every single day. But mostly those events are fun. They are things that I do through journals or through Karma or through Research Methods Division. And yeah, and any off time that I have, I will go catch sessions that look really interesting and I will meet people there. I will also go catch up with people that I haven't seen in years, people who went to graduate school with me. I still hang out with them, people that I've met through various projects, other universities, other roles that I've had. I go hang out with them. And so it is a great opportunity to learn and to get to know the field. It's a really good opportunity to go expose yourself to different areas of research through different divisions that you don't necessarily call home, but are still doing really cool, interesting new research, and just get to know the people and get to know the field really, really well. And over time, the conference becomes less daunting, and you get to know a lot more people, and you can fill out kind of a social schedule, but there's no opportunity like Academy. I've been to a number of other conferences. There's no opportunity that covers the gamut of management, scholarship, as well as Academy does. And so getting to meet those people and going to those sessions, not necessarily in your area of specialty, those two, but outside of that or tangential to your area of specialty, can be really eye-opening. And I found that to be a lot of fun.
Well, this fall, or in a couple of weeks, will be my 40th Academy. And my experience is probably a little bit different. In 1984, I was at the discussion of establishing the Research Methods Interest Group, which is the first step in becoming a division. And so while that was gave me hope, because my interests were fairly well defined at that point, well, that gave me hope of a community that I could, that was more, would be more aligned with my interests than any of the others. It went a few years, you know, to get it going and for it to become a division. And during that time, I shared a lot of the experiences of it's just overwhelming because there's so many people and you don't really know anybody. And you see these big names that you've been reading and you assume that there's no way they want to even know that you exist, much less carry on a conversation. And and at that time, and this is a good to AOM's credit, there was not nearly all of these special activities that they create that now kind of become the means to get together. But a few years later, as it got going, then it was it kind of became my home, and it was a good place to be. The way I describe it to people is that, you know, if you go to your first Academy and you meet five new people that you establish with, you know, then the next year you go and chances are those five are going to introduce you to five more. And so there's this phenomena where, as isolating and as lonely as it might seem early on, in pretty short order, you go feel like it's going back home because you're seeing people that you've met and seen before.
So you talk about finding your people with the establishment of methods as a division. So that kind of leads into the group we're here to talk about, Karma. So Larry, what is Karma? What does it stand for? So why did you start it?
I was really in the right place at the right time with the methods division because as it was in doing its first sets of activities, like I participated in the first PDW that it did on teaching research methods. So there was plenty of opportunity for somebody that was eager and for whom just say no was never a common expression to use. So I jumped in all the possible ways and became the methods division chair and came to really believe in this notion of a methods community where people could build relationships and feel support. And at that same time, there was just an explosion of new methods that were gaining a lot of attention, first with SEM, then with multi-level. And it became apparent as I was with the division, that there was a role for, you know, pre-conference workshops, post-conference workshops, training activities, because a lot of schools, for their faculty and their students, there weren't anybody there who could teach this kind of stuff. And so this was before laptops. So that really put a limit on what you could do in terms of the giving people hands-on experience. So I really believe from the beginning that having, you know, having some types of activities, exercises, or hands-on was critical. And so the only way to do that was to use a computer lab. And so it was really the desire to be able to want to offer short courses and offer the availability of a computer lab, again, because it was before laptops. That kind of was what led me to want to pursue this. And so I sat in my office at Tennessee. I knew we needed a name and wrote down on little sheets of paper things like statistics and institute, and all of a sudden center and advancement, and it was like, there it is, the Center for the Advancement of Research Methods and Analysis, and or CARMA. We're all live in a world of acronyms. So that's how it became CARMA. And so we started it at the Virginia Commonwealth, where I was at the time. And we did mostly things for VCU for the first 4 or 5 years. And then ultimately, when I moved to Wayne State, as it turns out, you know, centers at universities are something that of course, universities have all kind of infrastructures and policies. And if I had center in the name at Wayne State, when I moved to Wayne State, it was going to invoke, like, I think probably the Supreme Court was going to have to approve it. You know, I mean, just the levels of approval. And so they said, well, we were at that point selling institution memberships, you know, the term consortium. So we subtly changed the name from the Center to the Advancement of Research Methods to the Consortium for the Advancement of Research Methods and Analysis. And so we've been doing it ever since then. And I went from Virginia Commonwealth to Wayne State to North Dakota to Nebraska, and now I'm at Texas Tech. And so I think it's like our 24th, 25th year. No, it's... We started in 97, so it's a little bit more than that. Math was never my strong suit.
Which feels somewhat ironic. So for Ernest and Justin, how did you then get involved in CARMA?
So when I was a graduate student, I went to grad school at Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech had a pretty robust research methods faculty. So my advisor did some webcasts for CARMA, and we had an institutional membership for CARMA. So we would get together once a month or however often these webcasts happened, and we would get together as groups of grad students and just watch this, like the nerds that we were. And we had a lot of fun. We'd talk about it afterwards. We would usually go out to Rocky Mountain Pizza Kitchen and get some pizza and some beer afterward and talk about them. But we had a lot of fun doing that. And so I had a pretty positive impression of CARMA even as a graduate student. And then, you know, I graduated, I got a job and another job and so forth and so on. And a couple of years in, Larry came to me and asked if I would do a podcast. I believe that was on the one that I did on dirty data or data cleaning. And of course, having such a positive impression, I had always kind of had a career goal of doing something for CARMA, specifically doing a webcast, because I remembered all of those people that did them, and I remembered how awesome it would be to be one of them. So I got to do that. I think that was, 2019, 18, 20, sometime in that range. And then after that, Larry invited me to teach short courses, and I've been doing that. And I think I've done panel discussions for CARMA. I've done one or two webcasts for CARMA, and I've been teaching a short course on regression for an advanced data analysis in R. since I think 2020 or so. And so my involvement started as just kind of a Karma research methods consumer in graduate school. And I've kind of followed it throughout my entire academic career. And I've been very honored to become a part of it and such a big part of it in these last few years through the webcasts and the short courses, and then ultimately getting involved as an associate editor for Karma.
And I can talk a little bit. Being on that side of it, being on the instructor side of it, I think we can talk. I'll talk a little bit about later. You might have a question about that. But in terms of how I got started in Karma, this would have been, and Larry's in the room, it can correct my memory, but around 2005 at Virginia Commonwealth University, I was a doctoral student in the social psychology department under Don Forsythe. We didn't have a ton of, we didn't have that Georgia Tech infrastructure there that just, you know, you ate, slept, and breathed methods and statistics. So it was a little bit different, and we were anemic on it. So when we had these opportunities to have this access from the business school, Karma, it really was eye-opening. I began to attend every single web lecture that they put on, every short course that was available, and I looked at it kind of like the way that you would look at an immersion course for a new language. I mean, when you first go into it, it's literal and figurative Greek. You're just getting hit with equations and a lot of material. But over time, some of the points start to stick. And if you continue watching these webcasts, you just continue with the short courses, all of a sudden these connections start to happen between courses and between talks. And I didn't realize it at the time, but that effectively was what shaped my research approach for the rest of my career, or up to this point of it. So in that sense, and it starts to turn into an advertisement, but a large part of any success I've had in this business can be traced back to those early experiences in Karma that taught me it's more how to think rather than a specific statistical approach or a particular methodology. You know, Larry Williams and Bob Vandenberg's SEM course, this was the foundation for, of course, SEM, but how I started to approach measurement and things like method variance. Hannah Rothstein, Dave Borenstein, their meta-analysis class, that introduced the concept of publication bias, which led to a lot of my work in some other areas regarding open science. Paul Hange's course on nonlinear dynamics, he's one of the smartest people I've ever met. So much of what he said was a million miles over my head. But the thing that stuck in my head was, wait a second, you shouldn't always assume normality. We have these long tail distributions, these strange attractors, weird stuff that happens, and you should be prepared for that. And that affected my thinking, and that informed a lot of like my work with star performers and superstars. So I am a huge believer that these early experiences with Karma and that willingness that I had by sheer luck, if you want to call it that, to really latch on to it and attend every single thing that was available through Karma, I can't think of anything else that has helped my career more than Karma at this point in it.
So Larry, they've mentioned in their consumer phases as well as their participant phases, lectures. Justin talked about being on a panel, and they both talked about short courses. So what are the different offerings at Karma, and what are the differences between them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I guess I just like to say what an honor it is to be in the Zoom room with these two guys. And there's a group of people in them and others, 20, 30, that over the years have given of themselves. So when Karma, it's really what we do. That was the tagline on our t-shirt. And so that's a main point that I want everybody to know about Karma, is that at the end of the day, we are who we are because of the content we deliver, and we could not contribute that content if we did not have our new tagline, the best in our business, because these two guys exemplify it. They are the best of the best of the best. So I get to VCU in 97 and spent the first year doing mostly internal things, and then got the bug to do something bigger. I had hosted a conference in 94 on causal modeling, so I had some experience doing conferences. So we went through a period of several years where we did a mini, what we called a mini conference. And it was awesome because it would usually be, you know, two nights, like a half day Friday and a full day Saturday. And I'd bring in 8 or 10 people that would give lectures. We'd have panels and we would have workshops. And it was a great experience for a lot of people to come together and connect, the human friction of it all. And but the economics of that type of event were a bit challenging. And at the same time, there were two things that happened. One is we just had the realization of the need for more intensive methodological training, something more than just 3 hours. So that kind of led to the notion of a short course. And I think, as I recall, the first time I asked Neil Schmidt to do it, and so he and I did an intro SEM one that was enough of a success that we slowly grew them. And up until when we got before COVID, we were probably doing 30 a year, 2 or 3 different times during the year, probably on most continents at one time or another. And then also, so that was an important force that shaped our future. And then also at the time was this internet thing, you know, and people doing events over the internet. And so in the fall of 2004, we really, in like 2 months lead time, put together our first webcast series. We did 3 of them on a fall day in 2004 with Larry James and Jeff Edwards and Herman Aguinas on testing interactions. And we didn't charge anybody for it. We had some funding elsewhere. So, and we had like 35 schools signed up in that short order. And so it's like, okay, well, let's try to do one in the spring. So we did one in the spring. That would be 2005. And at that point, levels of analysis was emerging. And so we did one, kind of an introduction to multi-level analysis. And I think we had 55 schools signed up for that one. And so that kind of gave us the confidence to, as we headed into next year, to plan to do more, and more importantly, to charge universities a fee for doing it, because we wanted to be independent and self-sustaining. So that was kind of the origin of the institutional membership model that we started the next year, where in every year for many years, we did 10 lectures a year. We delivered them live. Then the recordings went into the video library. So now we've upped that. We'll do 14 webcast lectures in the upcoming year. And we have 250 plus recordings in the video library. And so the institutions sign up. It's roughly $1,000. And once they sign up, then they get access to the webcast lectures and on-demand, unlimited access to all of those videos. And so that was kind of our core activity for several years. And then COVID came along and we switched our platforms to using Zoom, which had two effects. One that's kind of a negative: when Ernest talks about his involvement with Karma, for many years, including while we were at VCU, all of the webcast presenters would come to campus. And so we could build like a day and a half schedule, and that was great for everybody. So once we did it, once Zoom became available after COVID, it was just so easy for people to originate their lectures in their own places. And so we, for the most part, have been doing that. So all of our webcast presenters for next year, all 14 of them, will originate it in their home office or wherever they are, however they want to, rather than coming. Well, once we made that switch to Zoom, we realized that we could offer some online, additional online events. The lectures were pretty much one way. We'd allow Q&A, but not in a very, very powerful types of way. And so that led us to start two panel series, one that's targeted specifically for doctoral students that we call our PhD prep panels. And so during the course of the year, I think for this upcoming year, we have five or six of them that will deliver. Whereas each time it's a panel session with a topic that's specifically salient and relevant for doctoral students at various stages. And then we also have Ask the Experts panel sessions, where we bring a group of panelists with expertise in some particular methodological topic and make them available. So those are the main four things that we've been doing, the webcast lectures and the panels and the short courses. And so we try to tweak them and do them, add some things, but those have been the main things that we do.
Great. That PhD prep panel sounds perfect for anyone that plans on attending the new doctoral student consortium at AOM.
Yeah.
That's the early stage doctoral students or planning to enter or just starting. So I'm sure many of them will be looking for resources just like that.
If I may, let me just add a couple things, particularly relevant for the new doctoral students. So one is that we, our content, right, is both introductory and advanced and qualitative and quantitative and aim for a micro audience as well as a macro audience. So we try to set it up so that the things that we do over the course of the year, there's going to be a little something for everybody. And so then I also want to draw attention to that we have put together, of all of those videos, we have put together what we call our Basics of Research Methods collection, which is a collection of 22 of those videos, and that are, we think, as a bundle, fit very nicely in terms of covering the spectrum of topics that you would get in an introductory research methods course. And we now have online multiple choice assessments for those 22. And if students or anybody takes them, they can earn a certificate and a digital badge and a discount on a future short course. And so we are highlighting that to all of our members, but particularly, as it turns out, a lot of times the international schools don't have as many resources for teaching research methods at their institutions. So we think this basics collection that we have will be particularly helpful to schools who find themselves in that situation. One other thing is that I mentioned our institutional model. And so the way that most people participate with us and enjoy accessing Karma stuff. But we also have a special program with the Academy of Management so that anybody who's a faculty or student member of the Academy of Management has access to a much smaller collection of those benefits. And so that's another way that people can join.
That is great to know. So you mentioned a few of the topics, qualitative and quantitative and things like that. So for Justin and Ernest, of the lectures and short courses that you have taught, what are some of the topics that you have covered And what has that experience been like?
For the short course, I've taught primarily meta-analysis and systematic reviews. I've been doing that for, I guess, about 10 years now, in person and online. I've been lucky enough to travel the world teaching meta-analysis with Karma, and it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. I like it because it's a little bit, I almost view it as very much in line with HR. We're supposed to be HR professionals, being OBHR professors here, but our performance evaluation system or management system, we combine the evaluative feedback along with the developmental feedback, like the thing you're not supposed to do, right? So that, and that's through the peer review system that we have. So from the student standpoint, it's really rare to have the opportunity to get developmental feedback from experts without it being followed by, and that's why we're not publishing your manuscript. So I think that the Karma short course, I absolutely love it for that reason. It's also really, from an instructor standpoint, it's rare to have an entire group of people engaged in a similar technique. They all want to know, you know, often they're coming in with these amazing research ideas and looking for ways to execute it. They have the substantive area. They just need the methodological expertise. So that's really wonderful when you can connect these broad methods to specific projects and watch somebody really flourish in that regard to get to the question that they're trying to get to, and making sure that the question guides the methodology as opposed to the methodology guiding the question. The other part that I've been a part of, keep this brief, is for the webcast. They are a bit scary in the sense that it's going live all around the globe. That's and you're also kind of have these huge bills, shoes to fill in terms of who's given talks in the past. You know, in the moment, you're just staying focused on, you know, not vomiting on screen and stuff like that. Is trying to stay within camera frame for somebody who paces a lot. But afterwards, you're just on cloud nine because you've been able to introduce something you're passionate about, and you got to do it on the same stages like Peter Bentler, Larry James, Ken Bolin, and, you know, all of Larry's peers, the Ployharts, the Bleezys, LeBreton, Bandolos, all these people. And, you know, even if I get one view and it's from my mother, it's still up there. I still gave a Karma webcast, and there's a lot of pride there, and hopefully some good that comes out of that for those folks that are watching it. So that's been my experience.
Pretty similar experience to Ernest. It's very odd. I also pace when I talk, and, you know, in this profession, we talk in front of crowds all the time. They're just called classes. But I remember when I was in kind of that last group that did webcasts at Texas Tech before 2020 and COVID and everything moving online. And so flying in there, you know, sitting down, meeting everybody, it was really, really great. Getting up to do the webcast, you're standing in front of a classroom. It is exactly like any other classroom, except there's camera equipment in the back. And although it's full of people, just like a regular classroom, you don't know how many people are online watching. It could be one, it could be a million. It's probably neither of those, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter. You've got to stand still and deliver it and stay within camera frame, as Ernest was mentioning. And it can be a little bit daunting, but honestly, once you've given a number of talks on topics that you're passionate about, all of that fear goes away within the first 5 minutes of speaking, just because you get into your topic and you nerd out about it and you get to talk about something that you're super passionate about. And so I really enjoy it. I really enjoy giving presentations anywhere, really. But generally, it was a different type of presentation than anything that I had done before, because it was in person, but also online. Ernest and I did another one, kind of teamed up for a webcast with Mike Brannick. It's based on a paper that we wrote about reviewing meta-analyses. And we did that one online, and it was a completely different experience. Yeah. But, you know, it was much more kind of like this podcast where we're on Zoom, we're taking turns talking, addressing questions, presenting things, so forth and so on. And so that was really kind of neat to see both sides of them. And honestly, for people viewing at home, it's probably the exact same experience no matter what the format looks like, whether you're looking at somebody behind a podium or behind a desk or behind a computer screen or whatever it might be. And so I think my webcast might be in the basics collection. I know it's in the survey measurement collection on Karma, on kind of data cleaning, dirty data, low quality data, things like that. In terms of the short course experience, I have really, really enjoyed teaching those. Those I've done in person and online as well. And we have done them online since COVID, and it's been a really good experience. So instead of using a whiteboard, I use a digital whiteboard. And instead of writing with markers, I write with this little pen and fake paper thing that shows up on the screen as I'm writing. And so you can show formulas. You can circle things, you can show kind of how this formula is related to that formula, how this analysis is related to that analysis. And it covers the gamut of manifest variable regression models. So anything general linear model based, ANOVA, regression, adding, you know, independent variables to make it multiple regression, or multi-way ANOVA, adding dependent variables for multivariate regression, and MANOVA, and so forth and so on, and all the way through model comparison techniques, mediation, moderation, polynomial regression, response service analysis. We cover a ton of different stuff. If people take Scott Tony Dandel's class on Introduction to R, they'll get a lot of information on some of the basic analyses. If you're going to take Bob Vandenberg's class on SEM, the short course on SEM, you're going to get a ton of information on latent variable models. And I kind of see mine as bridging the gap between those. It's all presented in R. I use some Excel, I use some whiteboard, I present logic, I present math, so forth and so on. But at the end of the day, we're working through basically a problem set that I make up. And at the end of the short course, I'm able to give all of the participants a list of these questions and annotated R code that will answer those questions. That's very easily modifiable for whatever their research question might be, whatever analysis they need. And then I give them a digital printout of the whiteboard so they can see all of the math and the equations and all the stuff along those lines. So it's really kind of a resource dump and a ton of different analyses that we cover over the course of 20 hours. And students in the short course tend to get different stuff out of it than they get from just a regular research methods course at their university, just because they've got access to not just me, but potentially other short course instructors as well. All of kind of Karma's resources, you can easily link it up with other webcasts that have been done or other short courses that they have taken. And so I found it to be really neat in terms of presenting what amounts to about a third of a semester's worth of time and content, all in a very condensed 20-hour period. And I can't speak for any of the participants who have taken my short course, but I get the impression that a lot of people really get a lot out of it. And I've heard really good things about all of the short courses, really. I had a student take Ernest's short course and just thought he walked on clouds, which he does, of course. And so, yeah, so I've had people take a ton of them, students who've taken a ton of them, and every single time they come back and they say that it was a super valuable experience, even if they're learning something that they have already learned in their classes, because they're getting a different perspective on it or a different expert's take on it.
Yeah, our instructors are just great. Because not only are they knowledgeable, but they care a lot, and they are experienced. They will be the editors or reviewers or be judging the paper. So it's an honor to have these guys working for us.
Well, and I think annotated R code is, you know, the secret sauce. If you can get some of that, it's immensely helpful in life. I think it's the only way I calculate Cronbach's alpha. So
that's a point not to be overlooked, Samantha. I am still adjusting R code or code like from M plus that I got from Danny Berg's class back in like 04. So there's something to be said about just having that code as a template to always be able to go back to.
So thinking of that, Larry, I just wanted to ask, too, have there been any particular topics that have been covered over your time with Karma that stand out to you? Anything that's your favorite webcast that was done or short course that is offered that you think is really neat for people to check out?
Probably my favorite was Ernest mentioned. So most of our presenters come from the management or organizational psychology discipline. But a part of what I think we are trying to do with Karma is also bring people who are outside of management and introduce them and increase familiarity within the management community of these people. And so I, from 1980 on, have been an SEM guy. And so for that reason, probably for me, just the rush of meeting and hosting lectures by Peter Bentler and Ken Bolin, that was probably, those are the ones that stand out the most. I can't really comment on whether the people find the content of their lectures any better than anybody else's, but I just remember I do these interviews with them before we get started. We call them Meet the Methodologist. And in both cases, when I started out, you know, I just had goosebumps, you know, because these are the people that have defined this topic area. So those, but also I would say too, you know, even though I'm a quantitative, I appreciate the qualitative side. And when John Van Manen said, yes, he would come and give a webcast lecture, and he came to Wayne State and we hosted a lecture by John, he is of, you know, of similar kind of stature and presence on the qualitative side of things. So this, I mean, what kind of a deal have I had, you know, the ability to invite people to do something that they want to do. I seldom have people say no. They're always excited and enthusiastic to do it. And it's enabled me to have a network of people that have become good friends.
That's great. Could you tell us a little bit about the new doctoral student workshop series that you're going to be offering next year? I think that's particularly relevant for this audience.
Absolutely. Learning to do research is a very difficult task. And it takes the blending of methods and statistics and theory. And they kind of have to all come along together in this iterative way. And somehow magically it comes together in a way that you hope can lead to good research. And I think in today's environment, today's competitive market, and just the explosion of research methods and data analysis skills and tools that people need to have, it's really incumbent upon every student to start day one. And but not all programs and doctoral methods courses at different universities, they have different schedules, and so we wanted, from our commitment to doctoral students and their training. Doctoral students and junior faculty have always been the reason we exist. And so we wanted to do something special to help new doctoral students in that process. So I've worked with Ernest and Justin, who are both editors for Karma. And we said, okay, what if we're to put together a workshop series, you know, maybe like a total of 8 half days, you know, things that every doctoral student should know by the time they get through their first year. What would those topics be? And these guys put together that list. And so we're going to, instead of offering it all right at the beginning, you know, we're going to spread this series, break it into 4 sessions, and that will be offered during the year, with the first one on Friday, the Friday after Labor Day, September the 6th. And it'll be roughly 2 hours that will highlight the different topics that they put together for things that they think doctoral students should know. In addition to that, then, we will link it to this basics of methods collection the 22 recordings, so that for each of those four live workshops that will be delivered using Zoom and meeting that will be interactive, we'll have a series of five videos that cover the similar type of content. And so our hope is that through the live sessions and the recordings that go along with that, we can provide a resource that will help students as they struggle through their first year trying to figure out how it all fits together. So that's kind of it. It's a new thing for us, and we're very excited to be offering it. And I'm grateful to the work that Ernest and Justin have done. And it's also informed, we did a survey over the summer from doctoral students of things that they thought were important topics. So we're very excited about it. And I should, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. I think it's great to have access to these kinds of resources and get an idea of what you don't know you should know.
Yeah, and also, you know, from day one, you start reading empirical studies. So, and most places start in day one, you start as a research assistant. So we wanted to have some tools available that would help students with their, we don't define a success just in terms of doing the research, but being able to read about it and help somebody else do their research.
For Justin and Ernest, thinking of the fact that doctoral students will be research assistants and we'll start getting into it. Have you had doctoral students at your schools that are involved in Karma? How, and if so, in what ways can students get involved with Karma?
So we have a Karma representative at UA. I'm trying to remember who it is right now. It changes every single year. And Karma has been really good about kind of involving students in that. And so when announcements come out for webcasts or when short course registrations open or when there's panels that are being offered or things like that, their job is basically to distribute that among students in the management program, throughout the business school, and even beyond the business school. And then I will distribute that among faculty and, you know, department chairs and things along those lines in case there's a topic that is interesting to anybody. So we've had students and faculty viewing webcasts and attending short courses from, I know, at least management and marketing, I think accounting, and maybe even education and psychology and some of the you know, departments that are outside of business school. In terms of taking the short courses, I know a number of our management people took Paul Blesi's, or our marketing people, students and faculty took Paul Blesi's multi-level short course. I've had students who have taken Bob Vandenberg's SEM class, Lisa Lambert's short course on scale development, Ernest's on meta-analysis as well. They don't take mine because they have access to me and they really don't need to. But yes, they've taken a ton of them. And again, they've all said that it was really, really worthwhile. Even if they thought they understood the topic beforehand, if I or somebody else had taught it to them, they still got a lot out of these short courses. And so sometimes they will get together and watch the webcasts live. Usually they will watch them archived, though, kind of on their own, based on whatever topics they're interested in. I can't speak to anybody who's outside of my department. But yeah, we've probably got a couple of people who take short courses every year and more people who watch these webcasts every year. And then, you know, one of our students who acts as that kind of liaison between other students within and beyond our department and Karma.
Yeah, as far as how doctoral students have been involved with Karma at my affiliation, past affiliations, I just say it's intimately. It's a part of the curriculum. So I teach the research method seminar at Indiana. I taught it previously at Iowa. Karma is routinely, webcast videos are assigned. It can be something that's, at least at Iowa, students could take it for actual credit. So there's this huge interconnection between doctoral training and Karma at places that I've been. And granted, it's a small sample, but every doctoral cohort I've been a part of as a student or a faculty member, the more Karma that cohort gets, the better the cohort does, not just methodologically or statistically or comps, but from a publication standpoint, from a professional development standpoint. And, you know, since AOM is right around the corner, from an academic placement standpoint, I see Karma as having huge, huge upsides for that reason. And that's the reason why we have so many of them and interact with it. One thing I would want to make clear is when I talk about the doc students that get involved with Karma, then for those that are new doctoral students entering, just know this, that nobody around you understands the method as well as you think they do. Sometimes you get this idea that, you know, you have to be a quantoid as a prereq to become a part of Karma. And that's completely the opposite way it should be. This, I've always seen Karma as a place where substantive researchers, new researchers can go to get help, not a place where you go to show off that you can flip a matrix in your head. So I think that for the new doctoral students, if you're a little nervous about Karma, that's the reason to go. Those are the folks that are going to most benefit from this opportunity. Leave it at that.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that. So I mentioned doing these interviews with the Meet the Methods people, with the lecturers, and I often ask them, well, how did you get involved? And it all began, nearly always began, with a substantive example. So we may think of people like Justin and Ernest and others who are Karma people as being methods people, but nearly all that's within that community, and this is the beauty of it all, they also have substantive areas that they work in, and they really focus on the link or the connection between the methods and the substantive questions.
Well, we just have a few more minutes, so keeping an eye on the time, are there any final thoughts that you all want to share about learning research methods, anything that's particularly useful for the kinds of students that will attend the new doctoral student consortium, final thoughts on Karma and AOM?
I'll start just because what Larry and Ernest said reminded me that, you know, we are a bunch of quantoids. We are research methods educators. We have been involved with research methods for decades, each one of us. And, you know, it's probably not surprising to hear a bunch of Karma contributors who've dedicated large parts of their careers to teaching research methods talk on a podcast about how important it is to learn research methods. But as Larry mentioned, there are substantive areas that we are all interested in. And my students don't have any desire to be like me whatsoever. They want to study what they're interested in. And some of them think that methods are just kind of a barrier to doing that. But it's a surmountable barrier. It's a barrier where you are limited in the questions that you know how to ask and the analyses that you know how to do, if you don't focus on research methods. And I fully admit that, you know, for a large part of my career, I have been focused on methods. I went to graduate school with the express intent of learning as much about methodology and statistics as I could. I eat this stuff up. I love this stuff. I live, eat, and breathe this. It's great. But I found that beyond just me, it's helped me in my substantive areas of research, but it has helped people expand what they are interested in studying. So as you're starting out as a new doctoral student, you're going to have these ideas. Some of them have been done before. Some of them are new. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. We have all gone through that. The more you learn, not just within your field, but also about research methods, statistics, analysis, et cetera, the more you learn, the more you will expand those questions, and you'll be able to ask more in-depth questions or better questions in the future as you learn both more about the substantive side, but also about the methodological side, because maybe there's a way of combining them that you haven't thought of. Even better, maybe there's a way of combining them that no one has thought of. And the more that you read, the more that you consume, the more that you hang out with people at Academy of Management who have diverse interests and, you know, are at varying stages of their careers, the more you're going to be able to expand what you are interested in and what you are capable of. So I'll just leave it at that. But impassioned plea to learn as much as you can, soak up as much of the stuff as you can, because it will only help you in the long run.
And I want to give Larry the last word. So to piggyback on Justin's comment, yeah, it's make yourself valuable. That's the bottom line. You know, as a first year, from my experience as a first year doc student, I was studying ethics under the direction of the guy that literally invented the theory, developed the scale, and wrote the book on the ethical perspective we were going through. I wasn't going to bring a ton to the table from the theory side of things. What I was going to bring to the table was methods, was my willingness to code article after article for a meta-analysis, willing to understand that, hey, you know, if we switch to a Latin squares design, we're not going to need 9,000 participants. We're going to need 500, you know, stuff like that. Those sort of things gave me a little bit of an edge early on that I hope that I was able to capitalize on to some extent there. So for those doc students out there that right now are looking for a way to make their contribution, methods are one of those places where it's relatively straightforward, relatively easy even to make yourself valuable. So I think that Karma has a wonderful upside to all those new doc students. I encourage them to participate in Karma.
Yeah. I would say just a couple of bits of advice for the new students. First of all, especially in today's times, we need relationships and you need community. You need to be a part of a community. And I have, from day one for me, the methods people are the very ones that on the one hand might seem to be most intimidating and most inaccessible. They are some of the most accessible people you will find in our academic community. So if you see anybody that's involved with Karma, you should have no hesitation to stop and introduce yourself to them. Because in my experience, they will be happy to build that connection with you. And there can be a way down the road that that connection will be helpful. The second thing I would say is that learning statistics and methods, I often talk about it as a series of connecting the dots. Maybe it takes 100 dots. And the problem is you don't connect them in any type of linear way, right? You might, the first time through a methods course, you might learn about dots 1, 4, 13, and you kind of wonder what are the connecting pieces between them. And then you have this other experience where you go and you backfill and you get other dots between the others. And if you just can be patient and let it come to you, you do end up having, for the most part, being able to connect all the dots. But it can be very frustrating along the way where you're missing some of them. And also, I will be at the New Doctoral Student Consortium, so I look forward to meeting you then. And also, we are exhibitors, so Karma has a booth at the Academy, so please stop by and learn more about us there. And again, I just can't say enough of my appreciation and thankfulness for all that contribute to Karma, including these two dudes here. So Justin and Ernest, I hope you don't get tired of me telling you how much you mean to me and how much you mean to Karma, but I'm going to say it again. We are what you give to us and everybody else.
We are happy to do it and honored to do it. Thank you for involving us.
Yeah. And thank you, Samantha.
Yeah. And thank you, Samantha, for setting us all up.
Yes, thanks, Samantha.
Yes, thanks to all of you for coming on the NDSC podcast and sharing all this great information about the resources available through Karma, as well as a bit about the Research Methods Division at AOM and general AOM advice. I think this will be very useful for our students and our participants, and I definitely will be checking out your booth in the Exhibitors Hall.
Okay. Have fun.
Thank you all.
Yep.
See you all at AOM.